Don't worry about it. Let's get straight into it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Breaking Point Podcast UK. Today, we are here with Jesper Walters. And is that right, or is it Walters?
Yeah, Walters works. Obviously,
Walters. Yeah, of course. And Jesper is from Denmark. That's right, isn't it?
That's cool. Right.
And he's a coach. And as always, we're going to have a chat about him. What he's up to, why he's doing what he's doing, and anything else that penetrates our imagination along the journey. So how are you doing, Jesper? How are you doing today?
Very well, man. Very well. A little sore in the body. I just started a new workout routine and I can feel it. But that's kind of good pain, you know. I'm excited for today.
Good, yeah. It's when you do something new, you have to take the original pain and then eventually you get used to it. So it's all growth. Pain is all growth, isn't it? Not all the time, but hopefully good pain is growth. Right. So let's start with the cliche question of tell the people why you decided to become a coach and what implored you and what made you think this is what I want to do, or did you just fall into it?
Well, long story short, I've always been very interested in people. In recent years, I've been more and more aware of how that's been a pattern through my life. And I've always really had this value of helping and wanting to serve in many ways. As a child, I felt it in both good and bad ways. You know, your parents would say, oh, it's so good to help other people, but also you easily become a people pleaser in that process, and that's not always healthy either. So I've really had to deal with finding the balance within that. And I think a lot of people that want to help others are having challenges finding that balance, because when am I actually offending helping because I just want to help, and when is it to make myself feel, you know, acknowledged or safe? So I was quite unfortunate to lose my mother at the age of 19, which was kind of like my big catalyst for change, as I say. It was a time where I found myself being like I was lacking meaning, so to say. And I've later on figured out that that's the that's how you feel when you have a depression. So I'm pretty sure that that was what was going on for me. But in that process, I also started just searching for more. And I was like, my perspective had changed a lot in the sense of everything what I thought the world was suddenly not that anymore, because such a big change happened in my life, right? But I then went out to search for meaning. And back then, I only found meaning in music, because I'm also a musician. I love to play. I love to do this. I love to do music in general, and so I went deeper into the music business. And the more I got into that, the more I figured out this is also just a business and an industry like any other. But for me, I figured out that it wasn't really the music in itself, even though I love music, but it was that I define it as the light in people's eyes that music created, which is what I saw when I went out to concerts, or if I hosted concerts around town. I could see that people actually liberated themselves a little bit from their worries and from the challenges that they were facing. I was like, there's something here. There's something here in that light. And I didn't knew it at the time, but I knew that, I didn't know that coaching could help facilitate that light. I just knew that this light existed. And then I thought about ways of essentially showing that more and sharing that with people. So I started, after doing music, I started making videos about creating different kinds of perspectives. I was interviewing people from around the world and how they were living differently. I interviewed a guy who hitchhiked the world for 10 years, for example, and a mother who used to be very corporate, who now was becoming very spiritual, and how she was raising her children. And also took some adventures of my own, documenting the experience. just to share how much more the world could be, because that is what really had ignited the light in my own eyes. And one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I was in this amazing community online with entrepreneurs who wanted to help people, who wanted to grow themselves, and there I learned a lot of the hard skills of sales and marketing. I even moved to Bali back in the start of 2020 to meet up with a lot of these people, because as they say, if you want to, you know, get to a certain place in life, you should probably be around the people with a similar mindset, with similar intention and values, right? So when I then went there and I asked a lot of these people how they got to where they were, you know, some of them had lots of money, some of them just seemed very peaceful and happy, and they told me that a big part of that had been giving or for them had been having a coach. And at this point I didn't know what a coach was. You know, I thought, you know, is that like a football coach or what is that? But they told me, you know, there's different kinds of coaches, business, health, and mindset, and so on. And I was like, okay, well, I'll listen to the people who has the results that I want. So I got a coach of my own. And as I always say, that moment of really diving deep into coaching, I see it to this day as the day I received my letter to Hogwarts, because someone came and told me, hey, there's something called magic. You want to learn about it? I'm like, yes, I would love to learn about it. And of back in 2020, Corona obviously happened, so I had to return home from Bali back then. And then I was like, well, I can't really do this business I was doing with these people anymore. I could, but you know, I really liked that connection aspect of it, and that was hard doing on my own back home. So what happened then was, like, I talked to my coach, and he's like, man, you've told me that you want to truly help people, you want to expand yourself and understand more of yourself in the world, and you want to build something that's just, you know, that is scalable, that's not where you have to sit in an office for the rest of your life, but you can actually make more money and have more impact. Have you considered going into coaching? And at this point, I haven't, even though I had such a big experience. You know, it's just sometimes you don't see the forest for trees, or how the saying goes. But then I just started studying it a little bit online, and I knew a couple of days into it, this is what I want to do. This is how I can bring back the lights in people's eyes and show them a different way of experiencing what we call life. So that's the short story.
That's the short story. Brilliant. Yes, I love the way you talk about the light in people's eyes, because there's a phrase that's thrown around. I don't know if you know it. Do you know? Have you heard the term escapism?
Yes.
Yeah, so people often talk about escapism. They say, you know, music, sport, film, they all call it escapism. And I think that's an incorrect terminology for the phenomena. Escapism implies, like, taking yourself, well, sort of sidestep or taking yourself away from something. I see the things that we call escapism, I see as elevating yourself above the norm and the I suppose, the possible dull nature of everyday life, and engaging in something transcendent and above of a higher value. So when you talk about meaning and the light in people's eyes, I think that's a great example of people engaging in something greater than themselves, because that's ultimately what meaning is. True meaning is engagement in something that is greater than you. If it's meaning for yourself, then it's self-indulgent, and it will fall apart if you're put under a certain amount of pressure and it's not sustainable. But meaning is really powerful. Have you read the book Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning?
I haven't read the full book. Okay. I've listened to parts of it on audiobook, but I'm very aware of the concept, and I use it a lot in my own coaching as well, explaining, you know, these deeper sense, because also in the community I run called the Growth Collective, we have a lot of focus on, you know, getting people to this place of deeper sense of purpose within their journey. Because if we have to motivate us to do something, it has to come from a deep place, something that is rooted within you.
Yeah.
And so that's the old the only way you can actually, you know, keep on going towards where you want is that you have that deep sense of meaning within it. So when people come and ask me or my fellow coach and friend Martin, like, how can I be more consistent? How can I stay at this? How do I not burn out? It always goes back to that meaning and that deeper sense of purpose, like, why are you doing it? And most people don't really know why they're doing it, right? It's just like an idea. It's not very clear for people. So it's a big part of the work that we do there.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about your community, but we'll stick to you first. So I've interviewed quite a few different coaches, and they all kind of have different philosophies or different doctrines. They sing off different hymn sheets, but they hope to create the same outcome, obviously. What would you say are what is your biggest, or what are your few most significant philosophies and ways of working with people that you're trying to promote in them?
For sure. We have a saying that goes, you're good enough as you are, and your potential is limitless. Nice. Because the thing is that when people come to a coach, there's many types of coaches, but usually coaches have a very future-focused orientation, which is also what we have. But there's also the idea of, like, well, if you have to grow all the time, are you then not good enough as you are? And yeah, we look at it at a different perspective. It's like, you are perfect. You are amazing just here and now. But that doesn't mean that you can't excel into more. And when I say more, it's not like more because you get more status, more money, but more in that sense of meaning we talked about, with something that is in alignment with you. I'll take myself and an example, because what happened to me in my early years and after all that with my mother was that I wanted more out of life. I was not satisfied with what I was presented with from society, in the sense of, go take a certain education and get a job and sit down and get a family. And there was just all these ways of how the culture was structured and how the norms were set that didn't align with me. I'm a very extroverted, adventurous person, and that only escalated after my perception had changed so much after the death of my mother. So for me, just knowing that it was good enough, whatever I did, wasn't enough for me. I was like, well, I want to do more. Like, I feel like I have so much to give, and it's so different from what I am told and what's around me. So let me find a different way of going and putting that out there and figure out what this is, or else I will regret it the rest of my life. So does that make sense when I put it like that?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's the notion of, you are enough. I feel, so from the religious notion, or the Christian notion, is everyone has a sense of divinity in them. And that's, we've kind of lost religion a lot in modern society, and we've replaced it with something like self-esteem. And self-esteem can be a good thing, or we've lost the notion of the divinity of the individual and replaced it with self-esteem. I sometimes wonder. And the thing about self-esteem is, it's very dependent on the way you're feeling about yourself, and the way, a lot of the time, it's dependent upon the way you feel other people feel about you, which can be quite a dangerous thing. But I like the way you put, you are enough, but you could be so much more. I think that's a really powerful thing. And it's give people that baseline, and then allow, and then encourage them to expand upon it. And as sort of awful as what happened to you when you were 19, and we can get into that later, I suppose, when we ask as much as you want to, when I ask more personal questions about you rather than coaching, you kind of had like a it's like your origin story, isn't it? It's like in Spider-Man, when what happens to Spider-Man, and then he realizes that there's something greater than him, and he realizes that despite how awful life can be, if you can move forward in a way that attempts to give back to others, that is, it doesn't make what happened to you worthwhile by any means, but it makes it as close to being worthwhile as it ever can. And as awful as it can be, it's a gift that you have that you can give back to the world. But, you know, if that sounds insensitive, it's definitely not meant to be in any way, shape or form. But, yeah, so that's
not at all, brother. I take it in and I relate to that a lot. Like, I've loved superhero movies and just superhero movies as a child, as I think a lot of us do.
Absolutely.
And I actually remember, just now that you mentioned it, I remember having thoughts as a child about, oh, well, life is so easy. You just do what's good for other people and then everyone is happy. And, you know, take care of your own needs in the process. Obviously, I figured more and more of this stuff out as I went along. And then I was so, confused by the world when that's not what I saw all the time. Like, why were people so selfish? Why were people having so different opinions? Like, it's so easy. Like, just do kind things and people will be kind to each other. And I remember having the thoughts of, like, how can it be so difficult? But obviously, we have many different perceptions, many different stories, many different ways of believing, and that makes it a bit more challenging. But just to your thought there, like, I was very much aligned with that vision, I definitely think it helped me in getting where I am today as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's so tricky about human beings is, we're all incredibly different and our personalities and temperaments differ so much that we're not always pulling in the same direction. So it can be incredibly tricky.
But the great thing about that is that we are also very, very, very similar. And and one of the greatest gifts I've gotten from going into coaching and neuroscience and hypnotherapy and all these kind of like different psychological aspects or spiritual aspects for that matter is that, wow, we are the same. We are feeling the same emotions. The only or the biggest challenge, I believe, that one of the biggest, obviously there's many fractions, but one of the biggest challenge we have as a species is that the way that we see the world is not how the world actually is. It is our interpretation of our experiences based on our presuppositions, conditioning, and the filters in our brain. There's a filter called the reticular activating system that literally deletes information if it's not in congruence with how we perceive the world. And really knowing that has given me such an amazing perspective in the sense of like, oh, this person is not evil, or this person is not, you know, sadistic or whatever it could be. This person, at least the vast majority, sees the world as they are the hero and what you are doing is the wrong thing. And when you get to understand that on a deeper level, it just changes your frame of mind. Suddenly you can create much more empathy and compassion for the people instead of being in this mindset of like, oh, you did wrong, or like you're destroying everything, like as we see a lot in, let's say, the culture wars in the States, or all these kind of faction battling each other, not understanding because they think they're the hero and the others are the villains, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I really try and preach these kind of teachings, this kind of wisdom we get from diving deep into either, you know, the spiritual or the psychological world, because you just get to understand what it means to be human on a different level. And when you see your own faults and flaws in the sense of how you used to interpret the world, and you're suddenly get forced to look at that and see, oh my God, I've been toxic for so long without knowing it. Then all of a sudden you can take that knowledge and put it onto others and say, oh, I get it. Because you used to be where, like me, to a certain degree, right? I hope that makes sense as well.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I love that. That was one of the best couple of minutes that I've had on the entire podcast. I think the notion of narrative is so important that we don't see a world. I was thinking the other day, I was like, we don't see people, we see characters, and we don't see life, we see a story. We project, you know, fantasy, you know, the fantasy and reality are in continual sort of interplay, and the world manifests itself to us dependent upon the narrative that we see it through. And as you said, that narrative lens exactly. that we see through is dependent upon our genetics and our temperament through our genetics, and B, it's dependent upon our environment and what we've grown up in. And it's possibly dependent upon a multitude of other things as well that we can't comprehend. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's and you have to be careful what sort of narrative or lens that you're seeing the world through, because that will, it will actually change the world that you see. It's not just a case of everyone sees the same world and then we all process it exactly. differently. It's actually a case of, as you said, with the reticular activating system, different things call to us and we omit and ignore anything that isn't in a line with that narrative.
100%. Everything is a story. Everything. Like your life is a story. Just like the way that people think about themselves. Like, do they think themselves about, I'm the main character? And let's say you're going through hardship, right? Well, is this hardship the end? Or is it what's hardening you and making you, is this your training phase in the anime or the superhero movie for you to get strong enough to go and tackle the world and the challenges? Or is it the end?
Exactly.
Like, what story are you putting upon your challenges? And the same when you meet people. Is the person, as we talked about, is he an evildoer that you have to put down? Or is there something more behind the scenes? It's just, if people would have that kind of perspective going into any kind of relationship or any kind of dialogue, communication, like, it would change the whole world. So easy. It wouldn't have to be more complicated than that. Which is obviously why I love to do my work, because, you know, every time I have a coaching client, they come, maybe they want to, you know, grow in their just personally and scale in their business or whatever it could be. One of the things that I always see is that if they're in a relationship, that improves a ton as well, because all of a sudden they learn to see that everything is stories, and they learn to change the stories, and they learn to see their own flaws and actually work with them consciously, which then releases all the tension that they were bringing to the relationship as well. So now they have space and resources to hold space for their partner as well. So it's just a few things that needs to be changed within the mind and how you perceive it. Because everyone thinks they're right. Everyone thinks they know all the details, right? Everyone thinks they have all the information and they're the smartest person in the room. And that's just not the case, because the person who thinks they know everything knows absolutely nothing. I think Socrates said something about that at some point in time, but it's really true.
Yeah. He said, yeah, you're right. He said something about, I know that I know nothing, and that's what makes me wise, or something along those lines. And
there's something.
When you work with your clients, what would you say, do you see any patterns emerging with the people that are coming to you, and B, with the problems that they're facing? Any similarities?
Yes, 100%. So obviously people are different and have different kind of challenges. But I think I've actually done a lot of work on this space to really kind of pinpoint the biggest challenges that I see in people. The biggest challenge is actually a lack of self-love. And the way that I see that is people are so hard on themselves, so hard. Like, the pressure they're putting on themselves, it's immense. And it's sometimes it starts with themselves and then it goes into society, and then they're all of a sudden in some kind of story and saying, and this is shit because he did this, and you know, and I can't this because I am bad. And that kind of mindset, that kind of thinking pattern, it's one of the things I really want people to know, is that it's not you thinking these things. That's a program. Because you would never talk to yourself that way if it was on your own conscious action taking. Like, you wouldn't sit down and say, you know what, Ollie, you're a piece of shit. Like, you, no one would ever do that. It's a program, because we as people have this idea that we should be able to do better. We should be able to live up to this idea of ourselves. But we don't understand that idea of this this, you know, high in the sky almighty version of ourselves is planted there from either society or parents or whatever story we have created to feel this way, right?
Yeah.
This is oftentimes you see this, and this is you know, in parenting. When does the child get praise? When they get straight A's, or they get good grades, or they did something good. The child never gets appreciated for the effort put in, which is actually what we should be appreciating, because then the child learns to understand that your worth is what you make of it. You try and you actually put effort into it. That's what's valuable, not the results you create. Because all of a sudden, your self-worth and the love as a parent that I'm going to give to you as a child is dependent on the results you come and bring me. You know, and that's, it's so unhealthy. And I truly believe that that's one of the biggest reasons why we feel such an immense pressure. So many of us try to live up to that ideal of the parent, right?
Yeah. Freud, he spoke about the psyche, and he put sort of three, I suppose, archetypes, but that's sort of Jungian. But he said there was the id at the bottom, and then the ego, and then the super ego. And the id was... Do you know this? The id was like where our primal drives existed. And then the ego was what we believed we were. And the superego was this kind of overarching, judging, societal pressure. And because he was quite a sort of rudimentary character, he believed that they were squashing each other in and trying to make like a functioning person. Although squashing, it turns out, is probably the wrong terminology. It's more a case of incorporating. And he thought that the superego was kind of like a oppressive patriarchal society, or it can be programmed as a result of a oppressive parent or a controlling parent or a society that is too prudish, or... All these sorts of things can control and encourage and cause the superego to become too controlling. And that's where you get people. That's one way of looking at it, where people could become incredibly harsh on themselves. And you see this with a lot of young women who end up with like eating disorders such as bulimia and anorexia. It's because, well, one notion of thinking is it's because their superego is too judgmental, and it's being unrealistic in their expectations, and I suppose also what society is putting on them, because there is a lot of pressure on young women to, well, less so now, but there probably has been. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on young men as well for different reasons, but you know, young women are judged more based on how they look than men are, and all that can load up on that superego, and it squashes it down. So I think that's a really powerful point you make of how people just don't think they're good enough, and that they have too high expectations of themselves. And I'm not sure how you tackle that.
Well, here's the thing. How about stopping with the expectations? When has an expectation, unless there's an agreement, ever been helpful? I mean, excuse you. I mean, no worries. Think about it. Like, when you set an expectation, one of two things can happen. either that exact thing happens, you know, that narrative that you have in your brain, either that happens exactly as is and you never think about it, or it doesn't, and then the frustration comes up because you were so certain that this was the case, right? You were so certain. And what happens when something disturbs this idea of control that we have? It creates frustration, it creates anger, or what it, like these kind of emotions. So setting expectations, and we all do this subconsciously, and I would say we have to be very conscious of the expectation we're setting, it's like shooting yourself in the foot. Like, you can have hope and you can expect if you have an agreement, but if you're expecting someone, especially when it comes to others in relationships, right? If you expect people to, you know, understand the way you're thinking or act in a certain way because they should be able to see it or whatever it is, you're literally just shooting yourself in the foot. So one of the biggest things
you can do is
stop with the expectations. Yeah, like, what the hell is that, man? It's like, it's like, oh, no, it's like I'm supernatural. I can read your brain. But it comes in all sorts of ways. This is obviously in the relationship, but also in the workforce. Like, I told you we were going to go through this on Monday and you're not prepared. Like, you just told me we're going to go through it. I didn't know that you wanted me to be prepared for something specific or in a specific way. You know, there's so much miscommunication. And I actually believe that's the root of all of it. People are just really bad at communicating, dude.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to our early point of how everyone sees the world differently. So we often make the unconscious assumption that everyone sees the world the same way we do, or at least a part, the focal part of them sees the world the way that we do. And therefore, if they go against that, that's how we turn them into the villain, and we create the hero and the villain archetype. And it's a case of overlaying archetypal narratives onto reality, which causes massive problems. Because as you said, we see the world as a story. Yeah, but narrow-mindedness and I suppose miscommunication, but it's more a case of not understanding that me and you don't see the same world because we're different people and we've got different experiences. And that's difficult to navigate. Yeah. I can't remember what the name of the group is. I've got it up here. So yes, talk about the Growth Collective group.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. So 2 years ago, actually more or less to this day, I was I traveled to Malaga because I had a friend there who was like facilitating some kind of community. He wanted to do some self-development retreat. And I ended up staying with him and a group of other creatives, entrepreneurial types. And one of them were my current partner, business partner Martin, and he and I just really got along. We spent a month being the main organizers of this self-development retreat we were doing, and we ended up hosting a retreat a month later, and it was a good success and we really enjoyed it. And at this time when we were together, we talked about our visions and what we wanted to create, and he did some coaching as well. And what we figured out is we really both really wanted community. We really wanted to expand and, you know, share with the world. And instead of everything had to be, you know, usually people get community in their schools or their work or in their family or the friends they maybe have a common hobby with or so. But we wanted to take the hobby of self-development and creating more perspective and these kind of things and bring a community forum around that. So we started the Growth Collective back then, and essentially was just taking it one step at a time, trying to figure out what needed to be. We started a podcast around it. We started then having this support group where we actually created the community essence, and now it has become more of like a dream focused community, because as we say, it's your safe space for healing and personal expansion. So we wanted to create that space for people to actually be able to share, because first of all, it's a lot easier to share your challenges when you're not, you know, getting watched by all the people you're usually around and what may they think and all these things. And as so, you can hear, listen to others and their challenges as well, and actually start to see, hey, wait, I felt that way, and now I've been thinking this way. It's like, oh, are we actually all just the same with similar challenges going through life? That's so interesting. So I'm not the odd one out. I'm not the one that's weird, even though no one is talking about it. Amazing. And you know what that creates? That starts to create some confidence and belief within yourself, because now you're starting to see that you're just a mirror of everyone else. And as so, you can start to work on yourself. And here you're actually in a community where people say, amazing, you're doing great. We love this. And hey, let me help you hold yourself accountable to that. And as so, it becomes this movement almost of people who want to help the world, help each other grow themselves. And that's essentially what the collective is. We're coming up with new initiatives. Right now we have, you know, a membership platform with a lot of different videos on self-development and growth. We have a course called Freedom Foundation, where you essentially learn all the what we define as the basics of getting your life back together and creating the foundation you can actually build upon, instead of having self-doubt or fears or challenging relationships or whatever it be, right? And then we're also going to a retreat here in October that the community arranged together, because we are much, very much like we can create it for you and charge you for coming here, but we really want this community aspect to be more in focus. So let's do it together. How about that? So that's kind of the idea of it, that people are here to help and grow together and learn. And then there's different ways of doing that.
Incredible. That sounds really good. I will definitely take a proper, a deeper look into that. I'd like to join it as well. So 100%. When you say,
yeah, for sure, man,
the basics, what do you think the core of a functioning human and a flourishing human is? What do you think lies at the core, or is it different for everyone? Big question.
Well, I look at it like this. You can live a life in survival, as most people do, or you can live a life where you're actually thriving. And there is some core elements to this that that has to be looked at for you to create enough stability and foundation, which is why it's called the Freedom Foundation, to go and create that life. So let's say, okay, I would really love to, let's say, create a podcast as you have created, but I have all the self-doubt and fear and what will people think. If you stay in that kind of mindset, you will never go and achieve the things you want, right?
Yeah.
So we need to look at all the places in your life where you are living and being in a state of survival, where it's more like, oh, I should probably not do this because what would people might think then? And then, you know, maybe they will discard me from the group, and then I won't be able to have this safety because all my safety comes from other people. You know, you can see how you can't really have control of your life if all your safety is based in your surroundings. So we help people get back to the essence of who they are, align with themselves, understand why they're thinking as they're thinking, why they're feeling as they're feeling, and why they're acting as they do, and help them change the different aspects of that that's not aligned with how they actually would like to live. Because then we get a chance to remove all the things that's not aligned and actually add on the tools and the skills that's necessary for you to build yourself up and go and do the things you want. So obviously everyone is a functional human if you're surviving, but is that really the life you want to live?
Yeah, that exactly. Do you want to survive or do you want to live is the question, isn't it? One of the things that came up as you were just talking there was, because you bring up me saying on the podcast, I procrastinated and I put off doing this for ages. And it was basically what made me finally do it was actually sort of desperation. And I realized how there's been a few things since then where, you know, there's something that you need to do, but you're like, there isn't that innate desire in this current moment in time for me to do it. So I don't need to do it. And then something happens where, you know, you fall into a pit, a psychological pit. And then it's like, how can I bring myself out of this pit? And one way is to do that thing that you needed to do. Mm-hmm. And that is, I suppose, that's a way of making a positive out of a negative. Because if the thing about being happy and positive emotions is that you become blind and you can become impulsive and you can become satiated, and then negative emotion comes along and everything that wasn't constructed perfectly in your life or wasn't solidly foundationed in your life will fall apart when you fall into that pit along with you. And that's a good reason to try and, you know, continually tighten up the bolts of, you know, so to speak, of relationships and of different aspects of you, so that it doesn't all come crumbling down with you when you fall into, that's what Freud, I think, would call an ego death, where you fall into a pit and
get humbled really and then quickly, yeah, and then because life wasn't as you thought.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and everything, all the presuppositions that you had no longer exist, and you're like, well, where the hell do I go from now? And one way is, one way out, or the way out for me was that I'm discovering a pattern is by doing the things that I know I need to do, but I don't want to do. And it's that desperation that gives me the, I suppose, courage, but it's probably not courage. It's more, it's a desperation that gives you the desperation to do those things. And then you rebuild.
Well, yeah. And it's powerful, right? And unfortunately, most of us have to, not have to, but most of us only really start to realize that we can't live in our own bullshit anymore when something like that happens.
Yeah, 100%.
Because we are pushing away negative emotions and things we don't want to look at and saying, oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, it'll work itself out, whatever, right? But unfortunately, we as people have, or as human beings, have much more inclination to do something to remove ourselves from pain than go towards, let's say, meaning, pleasure, and so. So it's only when we really start to feel the pain, if we're not very conscious in these moments of time, that we'll start to take that action, because then it becomes a question of survival. So it's kind of like, have you ever heard the story of the mouse and the cat and the genes? It's very short, but it takes this in very, very nicely. So essentially, when it comes to motivation and taking action, I want you to imagine that you are a mouse stuck in a mouse trap, right? Now, if you try and get out of the mouse trap, it hurts. And that's the picture of, like, it's uncomfortable to go into the unknown and move in any direction, right? If it's not what you're used to. Now, if I was to put some cheese in front of you that you would have to get out of the mouse trap to get, then there's this incentive to go and get the cheese. This is all the things you want, and like you can almost smell it. And the more precise and emotional connected you are to that cheese, the more you're gonna pull to get it. Now, if I was to put a cat behind the mouse, then you will want to really get away from the cat towards the cheese, and all of a sudden you have a huge wave of motivation to start taking action. But even though the cheese was there and you're in the mousetrap, it's like, oh, I kind of want to go there. But it's not as enforcing you to move as if the cat comes out. And that's because the survival aspect is so much more powerful, because we have a hard time actually maybe believing in the cheese is real, right? So oftentimes the cat is what really starts gets us to start to take consistent action, or at least get a move on. I also say, when I started to make these big moves and move to Bali and all these things back then, I came to a conclusion that I was more afraid to stay where I was stuck in that than to go and pursue the cheese, right? So a lot of us have to go into these kind of moments to really break through. But the great thing is, when you break through, then it's a lot easier to stay on track, because now you've actually seen, hey, the cheese is real. I think I want to do more of this moving forward.
Yeah, I hadn't heard it context, but I have heard that story before. Yes, there was a guy who did experimented on rats, and he starved them to 75% of their body weight. So they were evidently looking for food. They were hungry. So you could say that that's like the average human. They're searching for meaning more than they should be. They're not satiated. And he tied their tail to some sort of lever or pulley thing, and he measured how much strength they would put in if they had some cheese in front of them or some whatever rats like to eat. And then he saw that they would pull a certain amount, and then he wafted in some cat pheromone or cat smell, and then he realized that they ramped up even more. So it was like having this fear behind you and fear and desire in front of you, because
yes,
I think the desire to move away from something we dislike is possibly more powerful than the desire to move towards something we do like.
It's just not very serving in the long run, because if you keep focusing on the cat, you'll keep living in fear and survival, which is why we want to
very true
change the perception towards the cheese.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, let's talk about you personally and how your mental health, because it's called Breaking Point, and the reason it's called the Breaking Point podcast is I'm interested in what we've spoken about a little bit a minute ago, the point in people's lives where they said they need to make a change or everything fell apart and they needed to pull themselves out of the underworld, so to speak. And you've obviously already opened up about a huge occurrence that would easily leave anyone in that situation, to say the least. So I suppose a good question to sort of start things off in a soft manner is, do you find helping other people helps you?
Oh, tremendously, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I will never stop. It's like if you go to any kind of deep religious text, they will say help other people and you'll help yourself in some way or form, right? As I talked about being a people pleaser earlier and finding that balance, because one of my biggest realizations in the sense of, yes, I really love to help people, right? But there's different ways of helping. And there's also the idea of like, When am I truly helping people, and when am I sabotaging myself in thinking that what I'm doing is right or good? So the big lesson I got out of when I went through these kind of thoughts years back was that I can't truly help other people if I am sabotaging myself in the process, and as so my foundation crumbles in the process, because that's mean that I can't continuously actually go and help and support. So it came to me that which is very obvious when you actually think about it, that I have to be strong enough and take care of everything that are my needs before I go and support. Because that's the only way that I can keep supporting on a long-term scale and actually have that impact that I would love to have.
Well, you kind of just laid out what Maslow's hierarchy of needs kind of was in some degree. It was the aspects of the physical self and then the emotional and then all the way up to self-actualization. And I don't think it's a perfect metaphor for the way humans work, but I do agree with the notion that if you aren't fortified in yourself, then you can't be as beneficial as you can to other people. But I do think at the same time that it's a kind of a turn-taking thing, in that you can fortify yourself and make yourself stronger through also helping other people. It's a dynamic, and it's like a conversation, a Q&A type thing.
It's about being aware enough of what's going on. Like, if because again, well, I don't think I mentioned it, but like 95% of our life is subconscious. The way we brush our teeth, the way we tie our shoe, these kind of things. So it really comes down to we are all in these patterns of being, like thinking, feeling, and being, right? So the question is, well, am I helping people because it's like truly beneficial? I love it. There's deeper purpose within here. Or as I said earlier, am I helping people because I feel like this is how I should be doing it? Like, think about if you were raised in a family where like, we have to help people. We have to do this. Like, why are you so selfish? Then you're all of a sudden, you know, helping people because that's the only safe thing to do. So it always comes down to the context, but that's where it's important for us to really sit down and start journaling a little bit about like, why do I want to help people? What way would I want to help people? And also ask yourself, how is helping other people benefiting me? Because if the question is, or if the answer to that is like, oh, well, it makes me feel safe, or, you know, I like when people like me or something like that, then all of a sudden you are not helping people, you're helping yourself, right? Well, we are always helping ourselves when we're helping people to a certain degree, if it's in alignment, because again, you have to do what feels right to you to keep on doing it, but it doesn't mean that it can't be a win-win situation.
Well, working out your motivations behind doing something is very tricky, because often we have multiple motivations and we have to work out, is it a selfish motivation or is it a selfless motivation? But then even that question is kind of tricky, because your brain will trick you into thinking you're doing it for this reason, but you may actually be doing it for that reason. And it's very complicated. And at least I find it is when I'm like, why am I doing this? Am I doing it because of that? Or am I doing it because of this? And
yes,
you got to work out. But
what I will say to that is that it's, yes, these things are tricky, but it all comes down to the practice of awareness. And the more you understand yourself and diving deeper, like, the quality of your life depends on the quality of questions you ask yourself. And if you're not sure why you're good doing quote. Something, yeah, it's a great quote. I love it. But if you're not sure why you're doing something, you are not in control. If you can't say, this is why I do it, then you are in a pattern of being that you haven't looked at for so long, because it's just, quote unquote, who you are, right? So that control, that taking power back, comes with the questions you ask yourself. And it can be so basic as like, why do I put my left shoe on instead of my right shoe first? Why do I always pick the left one? And then it's like, oh, I guess I have an inclination to like to sit on this chair or in this position or whatever. And that piece of information might not seem very relevant, but it's saying something about you that you now know to be true because you investigated this aspect of you. And that information is something you can take with you moving forward, right?
You're honing the muscle which detects your actions, aren't you? Which is important.
Yes.
And another thing, this wasn't my idea, but this guy was saying how he said you should wake up in the morning, you should brush your teeth with your non-dominant hand, because if you imagine that all our thought patterns and behaviors and etc., the list goes on, can be very much connected to a certain way of thinking, and thinking, the brain is, you know, split in half for a reason, and the left and the right matched up opposite sides. And I think that's an incredible idea. Starting to do things with your opposite hand as a way of possibly cultivating the other aspects of your personality and the other aspects of the brain, I think would be a really helpful thing for everyone to engage in to some degree.
Possibly. Disruption is good. No,
disruption,
I get it.
Yeah.
Like, disruption is good because it takes you out of your pattern. And what happens when you're out of your pattern? You have to be conscious. And when you're out and when you're conscious, well, guess what? You are present. And most people are not present. Absolutely. They are in the future. They are somewhere else.
Yes, you are. I love that. I never thought of it like that, but you're spot on. Yeah, it makes you be present. And if you're present, you're conscious. And if you're conscious, then you're aware. And awareness is
what we're practicing.
One of the keys to, yeah, exactly. The keys to overcoming everything. Right. I think that's a good place to stop, because I want you to get on with your day and I need to get ready. So Jesper, thank you so much for coming on. This has definitely been, you are exactly the type of person I wanted to get on the podcast when I set out to do this. And I haven't said that to anyone else, I promise.
I genuinely,
so, and we've had the exact type of conversation that I really want to have. And you're someone who's very much worthwhile what they say they are, and you're not someone who's just faking it, as much as we're all just faking it to some degree, but you have proper insights. So you're a genuine presence or being in the sphere of coaching. So fair play to you, and thank you so much for coming on.
Sure. But I also just want to say, Ali, I also just want to say thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you for being curious enough and brave enough to do what you do. I truly believe this type of work is what makes the world a better place.